Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 55 degrees and overcast. Today is Thursday, July 19th, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. You may use Facebook to share photos from your summer vacation or goof off at work, but Sitka resident Rick Armstrong has found a different use for the social network. He's using Facebook to try to catch a thief. KCAW's Rachel Waldholtz reports.
In early June, someone broke into the Baranoff Island Brewing Company, which Rick Armstrong owns with his wife, and stole over $1,000 from the cash register and a case of beer. The thief was captured on video by a security camera, but the tape wasn't high enough quality to identify him. Now, however, Armstrong thinks he has his man.
There is no doubt. I'm 100% sure that this is our guy.
In fact, says Armstrong, he's known who the thief is for weeks, and so have the Sitka police. But thus far, there's been no arrest. And so, frustrated with the pace of the investigation, Armstrong took matters into his own hands. Yesterday morning, he posted a photo to the Baranoff Island Brewing Company's Facebook page. It shows a young man with long sideburns and a black bar across his eyes to conceal, at least slightly, his identity. Armstrong says it's the burglar, whom he's calling the brewery bandit. But the photo isn't from the surveillance tape. Armstrong took it from the man's Facebook page. The caption reads, "Yes, bandit, we know who you are. Please return what you have stolen from us to the Sitka Police Department ASAP. More pictures, names, and information to follow. Cheers."
It may be vigilante justice. I don't know. It's just I don't feel it's fair to the community, to my family, our employees, for this guy to be able to do this. And everyone knows he's done it, and nothing to come of it.
Armstrong didn't name the man on Facebook, but he says if the man doesn't come forward and the police don't make an arrest, he'll keep releasing information.
Next will be clear shots of his face and his name and the other folks that were involved.
This has posed a challenge for the Sitka Police Department.
Well, I appreciate Mr. Armstrong's frustration. We have to operate by certain rules, and the public doesn't always understand those rules.
That's Sitka Police Chief Sheldon Schmidt.
What may seem slow to him is just a product of the system that we have to work within in order to investigate burglaries and do it in such a way that they can be prosecuted.
Schmidt says he sympathizes with Armstrong.
They were victimized. People broke into their business and took money from them. So I definitely empathize with them.
But, he says, the police are pursuing their own investigation, and the public airing of evidence and accusation can complicate that process.
In general terms, posting things on Facebook to try to investigate a crime could be dangerous for the individual. You could make a target out of yourself. And furthermore, yeah, you can certainly hamstring the police as they try to investigate. And it could put us outside of the rules that we have to operate by. It's one thing to maybe dredge up some leads for the police, but I just wouldn't advise it. I think direct communication with the police on what's going on is a better practice.
In the meantime, the hunt for the brewery bandit has become a social event, both online and off.
We get phone calls, it seems like almost daily, of people that have seen him and know what's going on, and they're like, why hasn't something been done?
When the burglary first happened, Armstrong posted the surveillance video to Facebook and YouTube to see if he could crowdsource the thief's identity.
We see him come in the building. We see him walk through the building. We see him in the till, in the register. We watch him walk over to the cooler, the bottle cooler, load his backpack with bottles, and then put on his backpack as he goes out the door. We see all of that.
The Facebook post led to other evidence, which Armstrong said he isn't yet ready to make public.
I really don't think I can share that just yet. It's going to come out slowly one way or the other. Hopefully the Sitka police arrest him.
Either way, he says, he feels the evidence is ironclad.
Is there any chance you might be wrong, that you might have the wrong person and might sort of plaster the wrong person's face all over Facebook with this accusation?
You know, at the beginning, I definitely was very concerned about that, and that's why we vigilantly made sure of the information that we have, that it's 100% sure that this is our guy.
And that may be good enough for Facebook. But Schmidt says the legal system has a different standard.
I think people understand, I hope that they understand, that we have to do things according to certain rules so that we don't violate people's rights. People have rights, and we take those very seriously.
Even if they are the brewery bandit. In Sitka, I'm Rachel Waldholtz.
Few people know more about the prevalence of substance abuse in Sitka at any given moment than Michael McGuire. Like most places, alcohol is the most commonly abused substance in Sitka and will probably remain so for the indefinite future. Number two might surprise you.
Well, that's easy for me to answer because it's prescription drugs right now.
That's McGuire answering a question from Daily Sentinel reporter Shannon Hoagland at yesterday's meeting of the Sitka Chamber of Commerce. McGuire is the executive director of Sitka Counseling and Prevention Services, known as SCAPS for short. McGuire and senior staff members outlined the scope of the organization's services in Sitka and Yakutat, but it was McGuire's candor about Sitka's drug problems and their seasonal nature that resonated with the chamber audience. Here's a brief excerpt of his remarks.
We see different drugs come in with different, not only times of the year, but let's say the fishing community comes in. When the herring boats come in, and they bring that, particularly when the herring season is coming through, you're going to see a lot of pills come through town. They just come in on the boats, they're distributed on the docks, and away they go. When the weather starts like right now and it clears up a little bit, you have a lot of methamphetamines coming in because they can, I hate to tell you this, they can cook them out in the woods of Sitka, which they do. So there's a lot of meth in town right now. Come the winter, I hate to tell you this, but we do get a lot of heroin come through this town, and we see it. And what's interesting to me is when I deal with these young Native kids that I see from Mount Edgecombe, and I'll see them and we'll get talking to them and discuss their drug or alcohol use history. In the most remote of these villages, these drugs are prevalent also, which sometimes to me is astonishing. I do know that our physicians here are not the ones responsible for the drugs hitting this town. I've talked to many of them who do the prescription writing here, and they've initiated their own contracts, the physicians in town here, to watch each other. The pharmacies have gotten involved. You know, you used to have pharmacy chasers. The pharmacies are now involved. They're cross-checking anything that would look like an opiate to see if it had been filled in either pharmacy or anywhere else. So they're on top of it, but it's just coming in through the docks and coming in through the planes.
That's Michael McGuire, the executive director of Sitka Counseling and Prevention Services, speaking to the Sitka Chamber of Commerce yesterday. McGuire and his staff offered a detailed overview of SCAP's services. The organization is one of Sitka's largest businesses with 34 full-time employees and an annual budget of $2.5 million. McGuire spoke about plans for a Women with Children program to be housed in the former married student apartments on the Sheldon Jackson campus, and Aurora's Watch program for women that would mirror the existing residential treatment program for men, and the need for a community detox facility. You can hear extended audio of his remarks on our website, kcaw.org. NOAA scientists are combing Alaska beaches again in their search for marine debris from the 2011 tsunami that hit Japan. Five scientists from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration are in the Yakutat area this week, where they will be walking several miles each day before going on to a new segment of beach. After Yakutat, they'll head to the Cordova area, Kayak Island, and Montague Island in south-central Alaska. Jacek Maselko is the lead scientist. In an interview before the group left, he said NOAA has previous data from many of the beaches, so they will be able to see how things have changed over time.
We're going to specific spots that we've surveyed in the 2008 and I think 98 and then 92 in prior years. So those are exact specific beaches, shoreline segments that we have surveyed in the past. So we will have a pretty good long-term distribution of the density and the composition of the debris that's found on those specific beaches.
In June, the NOAA scientists visited 36 Southeast Alaska sites on the outer coast from Dixon Entrance to Cape Spencer.
There's so much variability between each segment that you cannot use one to predict what's going to be on the next one. So really what we found here in Southeast in our last survey, the densities, the quantities, we can't really use that to say what we're going to find further up north. Even on adjacent segments, they can have quite different densities.
Maselko said he intends to look for tsunami debris over as much of the Gulf of Alaska shoreline as possible this summer and revisit many of the same areas next summer. So far, most of what they've cataloged is common stuff, but in the June survey, the scientists found a number of large black, yellow, and orange oval buoys, which they believe to be part of the Japanese fish farming industry. The Douglas Indian Association on Tuesday held a blessing ceremony at Gastineau Community School for human remains found during a renovation project. Last month, the city and borough of Juneau halted construction after workers digging in front of the building unearthed remains and a headstone for Sam Goldstein, a Chilkat man from Klukwan who died in 1927. It turns out the remains did not belong to Goldstein, whose body is still missing. At the request of Douglas Indian Association officials, the city brought in archaeologists from Northern Land Use Research in Fairbanks. They correctly identified the remains found near Goldstein's headstone as those of a young woman in her early to mid-20s. Deputy City Manager Rob Steedel says they also used ground-penetrating radar to scan the construction area.
They were able to identify six probable sites for graves and four possible sites, as well as a number of other sites where they just couldn't tell what was going on, but they thought they were unlikely to be graves.
Steedel confirms additional human remains were found, but declined to give an exact number. He says anthropologist Joel Irish with the University of Alaska Fairbanks was brought in last Wednesday.
He helped complete the uninterment of these individuals, identify them to the best of his ability as to sex and age, and then on Friday we reinterred these individuals at the school site in an area that won't be disturbed.
Members of the Juneau Assembly and School Board attended Tuesday's blessing ceremony as guests of the Douglas Indian Association, but Steedel says DIA officials requested that it not be noticed to the public in order to keep the gathering small and private. Zone weather forecast today for Sitka and Port Alexander calls for rain, highs around 60, northwest winds 5 miles per hour, becoming east 5 to 15 miles per hour this morning. This is KCAW in Sitka.